Actually, let me get those Kleenex. My allergies are, like, fucking going nuts now.
My nose is just, like, constantly.
That was fun to watch Tommy the other night.
Oh, yeah, I'm glad
I enjoyed it.
Over and see it.
You watched Tommy last night?
Mm-hmm. I'd never seen it before.
Friday night.
Fucked up.
Faith has been giving me much-needed Ken Russell education. Shock to no one. I love his maximalism and just the, like, crazy shit he does in his movies.
Yeah.
So far I've seen now two of him, his stuff. I've seen List of Mania and Tommy.
I don't really know.
I don't know that you would have really ever seen, unless, like, the parts of Tommy you would have seen.
I've seen,
like,
Tommy, but
right.
I didn't like it.
Yeah. I don't know that you would have ever seen anything else he's done, honestly.
I know.
Yeah.
I know that sometimes you have to tell me things, but I know that I haven't seen a Ken Russell movie. I barely know who Ken Russell is. He does documentaries sometimes, right?
I don't think so.
There's another Ken that does documentaries.
Ken Burns.
I was going to say, it's likely that there is a Ken who does documentaries.
Ken Burns. I get him confused with Ken Burns.
Yeah, they're two very different styles,
I think. They're both Kens,
yes.
And I have not seen their movies.
And they're both in film. That would be pretty funny if Ken could meet Ken.
Well, it would be, because one of them's dead,
I know,
that would be especially funny, one would say.
Ken's on Ken's.
Ken Burns very famously has that awkward bowl cut.
He is in Coons?
Look it up.
I think it's one of the worst. Like, is it his real hair or is it a hairpiece?
I really don't know. Like, a thing with Dean
Good
Koontz
question.
Saying
I don't
the
know.
Weirdest thing I've ever seen. I just looked up Dean Koontz because I was thinking about Dean Koontz's bowl cut.
Lee, when aren't you Googling Dean Koontz, to be fair?
Okay. I think Dean Koontz's bowl cut is worse than
Kimber. Let me see Dean Koontz's bowl cut.
Yeah, show us Dean
it's
Koontz.
It's pretty bad, guys.
That is pretty bad. This is like Jim Carrey in Dumb and Dumber.
It's Jim Carrey. Also Bieber.
And then I'll show you Ken Burns real quick. I think it's better.
I mean, there it's fine. Like, this is, like,
that's,
fine.
That's
a haircut.
Okay.
This is, like, nonsense.
This is better than the other one that we did.
I don't know.
I think it's better.
I don't know.
It's both.
What is wrong with bowl cuts? Who decided that they should be a thing?
I think it's... Okay, here's the thing. On a small child, I totally
It's fine.
Get it.
Sure, whatever.
I totally get it.
It is like a haircut you give so that they can go play in the mud.
Exactly.
Right. It's like you literally just, like, put the thing on their head and, like, go, get out of here.
Yeah. You just want the hair out of the face.
You just, like, yeah, they're, you, that's as long as you can get them to sit down
yes.
for.
I will say that I probably had a bowl cut for too long. Like, I was too old when I started.
Do you know what was the real 90s thing? Because I had it at one point, and then I got mistaken for it. Was it Yeah, the side.
Yeah, the curtain bangs.
Yeah.
I got
curtain bangs, and my eventually gay best friend also had curtain bangs.
It's...
And my mom stopped him driving home one time because she thought I was walking home.
Welcome to a new episode of Why Did We Watch This, the podcast where three friends sit down with a troubled movie and a themed cocktail, talk about what worked, what didn't, and how they would fix it. I am Chris Revelle, Tacoma, Washington.
I am Lee, what have you learned, Dorothy Delahanty?
And I am Brendan, Poppies, Drischler.
And I'm sure you can tell by these nicknames that we watched the 1985...
Wizard of Oz!
Yes, exactly! Volunteers from 1985, starring a very young Tom Hanks, very young Rita Wilson, very young John Candy, very young Getty Watanabe.
Ironically, a very old Getty Watanabe.
How
He's
old?
Benjamin Bunt himself.
Oh.
He's actually 24 now.
Wow.
Yeah,
wow,
yeah,
good
great.
For him.
Yeah. It's directed by Nicholas Meyer, who I think is probably best known for the 7% Solution, which Lee, I assume, knows.
Yeah.
As the Sherlock Holmes, yeah.
Wait, who's in this?
Nicholas Meyer,
he's
the director.
Director
of this.
Oh, Nicholas Meyer directed the movie.
Yeah.
He also wrote the book.
I know he wrote the book. I don't know if he directed the movie, the 7% Solution.
I didn't know that he directed movies.
Yeah. So he directed Star Trek II, The Wrath of Khan, which is, I think, widely regarded as, like, the best Star Trek
movie. Yeah.
It is. Yeah.
He famously wrote a sequel to The 7% Solution, where Sherlock Holmes solves the case of the Phantom of the Opera. It's a crossover
okay.
Phantom of
I'm
the
here.
Opera.
Give us
you got
that
me.
Movie.
Yeah.
And
Henry
Nadler comes back for it.
Hell
book.
Yeah.
It's a great book.
Give me that
I
movie.
I had in the other room. I actually have two copies of it.
Do you know Time After Time with H.G. Wells?
Oh,
the movie
yeah.
back?
Yes.
He directed that movie.
He directed Time After
Time. So, like, this is a guy, Lee, this guy has been in your life and you didn't even know.
God. If he's given us gifts, we weren't aware.
If he was born in my generation, we would be together right now.
You're like, I get you.
Yeah.
Right. No, Nicholas Meyer, who is, like, I think not an untalented guy, no. But anyways.
Well, and he made a very 80s movie that comes with all the 80s sensitivities towards race that you can imagine.
Right, exactly.
But before we get into everything about Volunteers, what did we drink?
The drink we made for Volunteers is called Victory's Fuel. It's 2 ounces of white rum, 2 ounces of lemon ginger syrup, coconut seltzer, a lime, and some Thai basil leaves. Lemon ginger syrup is pretty straightforward. It's just half a cup of sugar, half a cup of water, half a cup of lemon juice, and 2 tablespoons of chopped ginger in a saucepan. Put it at medium-high heat. Once the syrup boils, reduce it and let it simmer until it's reduced. Wait until it's cooled and strain it out. For the drink itself, you're muddling the Thai basil in a shaker with rum and lemon ginger syrup. Squeeze the juice of a lime into the shaker, shake it until it's chilled, and strain into a glass over the ice. Top with coconut seltzer, stir it gently, and garnish with Thai basil leaves.
Mm. A pretty tasty tart confection.
Yeah.
Perhaps for a warmer season than what we're currently experiencing, but appropriate for the setting of the movie.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was really just a question of trying to find a movie that, or a drink rather, that seemed to have something to do with, like, Thai-themed ingredients.
Yeah, it was definitely, like, not something I would order if I saw it on a menu. I just don't like the stuff involved, but it tasted decent.
Yeah.
I finished it, which I can't say for a lot of drinks.
Yeah, I'm not always a huge fan of coconut or
rum.
Yeah, or rum, or sometimes even, like, basil in cocktails. Like, I can go either way with sort of more herby cocktails. Like, sometimes I love them, and sometimes it feels like I'm drinking, like, rainwater or something, you know?
Yeah, I will say that I don't really notice I didn't really notice the coconut or the rum as much.
I didn't know, it was weirdly, like, it did not taste very alcoholic,
The citrus
dangerous.
And the basil kind of overpowered.
Yes,
the,
I agree.
Which I liked as the flavor. I mean, I love coconut. I'm not a rum person either, so I wasn't that mad about not being able to taste the booze. But I do commend us for... We stepped into a liquor area we don't currently step into with rum.
That's right. Tried something a little different. It worked out for once.
And I think it's to our credit we were able to make a rum drink that we...
liked.
That we liked.
That we would drink.
Yeah. Or that at least was drinkable
for us.
That
was potable and drinkable.
It's at least potable. And potent.
Yeah.
It is a potent potable.
Are we going to turn towards Wikipedia?
I can do it. Yeah.
Summary.
I got it open.
What a
joke. Should I do it all in a George Plimpton-style affectation?
If you can.
If you've got
Lawrence Bull III is a spoiled kid who just graduated. I'm just doing Cameron from Ferris Bueller.
Literally.
From Yale, class of 1962, with a $28,000 gambling debt when his father, Lawrence Bourne Jr., refuses to pay his son's debt involving the 1962 NBA Finals, the son escapes his angry creditors by trading places with his college roommate Kent on a Peace Corps flight to Thailand. On the plane, he meets Washington State graduate Tom Tuttle from Tacoma and the beautiful down-to-earth Beth Wexler, the latter rejecting his advances once realizing why he is really there. In Thailand, they're assigned by John Reynolds to build a bridge for the local villagers. On day one, Tuttle gets into an argument with the villagers over what wood to use. The only native who speaks English is Ut Toon. Tuttle gets captured by communist forces who brainwash him to do their bidding while Reynolds makes passes at Beth. Lawrence befriends Ut Toon, teaching him and several other villagers various gambling games, but they are met by the powerful drug lord Chung Mi, who forces them to finish the bridge quickly. Lawrence eventually wins over Beth, but she is captured by Reynolds, who is revealed to be working with Chung Mi. They rescue Beth, who urges them to destroy the bridge. Lawrence reluctantly agrees after professing his love for her. They get the villagers on board with the plan and get Tuttle back to reality, plotting to leave dynamite in the center of the bridge so that the entire structure collapses. The plan works fine until Lawrence is confronted by Reynolds, who threatens to kill him. Lawrence distracts Reynolds long enough to enact the plan, jumping into the river as the bridge explodes. Beth saves Lawrence by performing CPR and they kiss once Lauren wakes. Sometime later, Lawrence and Beth are married in the Thai village. Lawrence writes to his parents saying he finally did something right for the right reasons. That's the movie.
All right.
Is that accent as good as Tom Hanks's, I think?
I mean, at least as.
Just as convincing as Tom Hanks's?
Yeah, yeah. But very natural.
Yes, no, this is my natural affectation, as you all know. The cast real quick is Tom Hanks as Lawrence Bourne III, John Candy as Tom Tuttle from Tacoma, Rita Wilson as Beth Wexler, Tim Thomerson as John Reynolds, Getty Watanabe as Ut Toon, George Plimpton as Lawrence Bourne Jr., Tom Hanks's father. We're getting into, like, a little bit of an iffy territory after this. Xander Berkeley is his roommate. Yes, the roommate who he switches places with to get into the Peace Corps. But aside from that, it's you know, there's a lot of East Asian actors in here who aren't even really listed here. So
I do like that John Candy is credited as
Tom Tuttle from Tacoma.
Tom
yes.
Tuttle from Tacoma.
Yeah, no, it is. It's good. It's good. Yeah,
it's a good bit.
It is a good bit.
So yeah, this as you might understand, this being in 1985, this would have been early days for pretty much in the careers of all of our kind of recognizable yeah. stars in this case.
It's what, fifth or sixth movie he's done?
Yeah, I meant to look up real quick. I'm just curious, like, what movies, yeah, like, what Baby at? Hanks movies.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5. I was right. Fifth movie.
Anything notable before?
Yeah, The Man with the Red Shoe and Splash are the big ones.
Yeah, which also had John Candy in it.
What is He Knows You're Alone? That's his first listed movie.
Come again? He Knows You're Alone? Is that like a TV movie? Oh, wow, look at him in this picture. He's like a child in that movie.
Wow.
Like, look at that baby.
Oh, wow.
Look at the little baby Hanks.
And I guess, I wonder if this would have also been around the same time he was in that
with
Satanic Panic D&D made for TV
Maces
movie.
And Monsters,
yes,
which was 82.
You. Oh, okay, so yeah.
That was 2 years before. He Knows You're Alone was 2 years before Maces and Monsters. Then, like you said, yeah, Splash, Bachelor Party, The Man with the Red Shoe, Volunteers. Money Pit was after.
Yeah,
like the next movie he did after that. So we're in an interesting period in Tom Hanks here.
It's where he's figuring it out, but I just kind of wanted to talk about, it's like, it's early Hanks. Obviously, we're not talking about characters just yet, but I do think it is worth pointing out. Weird fit to pick Tom Hanks to play your patrician boy.
I mean, yeah, to play like your old money wasp, I think is what it is. Again, I don't want to get into too much character, so I don't want to like go into too much of this now.
Sure.
But yeah, it is a profoundly weird choice for him in this movie. I feel like it probably just kind of speaks to where he was at the time.
Yeah,
I don't know.
I point that out only to say that we had not figured out what was the winning formula for him yet.
Yeah, I mean, well, the thing was, I think it's like we had figured out that he was good at comedy, right? Right? Mm-hmm. In theory, abstractly, this probably makes some sense to do, right?
Right.
Like,
yeah.
without looking too much into character, sure, if you want to make, like, a knockoff version of Stripes with Tom Hanks and John Candy in the Peace Corps, yeah, okay, I can see that on paperwork. And when you start adding in the trappings of it, oh, it's a period piece, and
right.
he's the scion of this upper crust, sort of waspy New England guy, it's kind of like, I don't know about that, but okay.
The moneyed accents flow thick and fast.
Sidebar, I would love to talk about Stripes at some point. Just as like a, not doing it for the pod,
right.
but maybe on a mini. It's a movie that I really liked.
That was a movie that I saw like once and do not remember super well. I feel like I didn't see it until college, but yeah.
I saw it a lot of times when I was growing up. My dad had it on. I didn't think my dad introduced me to it.
So is it a similar vibe to this?
I mean, it's a similar vibe in the sense that I think it's like
fuck
a bunch
ups,
of like, right, it's a bunch of like fuck-ups and chuckleheads getting together for a group to do something in a foreign country.
Okay.
Yeah. Obviously, Peace Corps and military are kind of two different things.
No, but
this does kind of feel a little bit like it might have gotten made because of Stripes.
And I can see the vibes.
I thought that Stripes was before.
It probably
I'm wrong.
Is.
I mean, yeah, let me double check this now, because now I want to make sure that I'm not being complete. I feel like Stripes was earlier.
81.
Okay, yeah, so several years before this movie.
Yeah, yeah.
It kind of be one of those things where like it was kicked around for a long time, and then Stripes came out and was a hit, and someone was like, oh, hey, we have this story about people in the Peace Corps.
It's
like, it's a comedy, right? Or it feels like something that Stripes came out and every writer was like, oh, shit, like, how can we make our own
but
Stripes?
But it is like the anti-Stripes, because Bill Murray is like sort of douchebag New Yorker stereotype. Like, I am the everyman normal New Yorker guy, and I'm
Tom Hanks is an upper crust.
Yeah, yeah.
And
I'm gonna take my like street smart
right.
sort of knowledge, and I'm gonna like use it to sort of get through, finagle my way through.
Right.
Whereas like Volunteers is like I'm gonna use my like Yale education.
Right.
To weasel my way through the.
It does. I do think they both kind of have a vaguely similar sort of thing, where like both the Tom Hanks character and the Bill Murray character are sort of like they learn to care by the end of the movie.
Right.
A little
correct.
Bit. Like they learn to not be such a self-involved asshole.
Yes.
And so that I think is kind of the similarity too, where it is they're coming from two different starting points, but they do have a similar journey.
Some vague slanted sense of duty isn't.
Yes.
Still at the
right.
end of the movie where
right.
it's like I care mostly just because I'm doing good at it and that's fun for
right
me.
Yes yes and now I realize that like yeah I guess I do have to do the right thing okay
yeah.
fine let's do it let's blow up the bridge. I don't know how much I want to read into it necessarily, but it does feel like
it
this is
like
sort,
some similar
right thing. This does sort of feel like it might be a response to Stripes in some
mm-hmm.
way. I don't know.
I did just want to also point out that before the movie has fully shifted over into Thailand and kind of the bulk of the story, we were kind of talking about what we were watching at this time. The setup is actually actually pretty reliably funny and solid. You're just kind of watching Tom Hanks be a rich twit around Yale. But it also just has some great jokes. Like, I could not get enough of Bootsy.
Yes.
Give me more Bootsy.
Right. The girl he is kind of fooling around with and sleeping with in the scenes at Yale in the beginning.
The driving through the map bit is pretty good.
Right, right. Yes. When he's, they're doing the sort of old fashioned, Tom Hanks is driving, being pursued by the guy he's in debt to. And you can see like the sort of like dots trailing through the map. And then as he reaches his dot reaches the airport, all of a sudden he crashes through the map in his car, which is a fun little visual joke. I don't know if this is something we would talk about now or later, but just the idea that this movie has a couple of jokes that kind of feel a little bit fourth wall-y, a little bit more outlandish and unrealistic and over the top. There's the bit where they read the subtitles at a certain point, which again is a joke that I feel like has been done before.
But it was still very welcome here. Like, I was, I mean, we can cut to it, I guess. It was going to come up later, but we can do it now.
Okay.
I do find those were its, like, most surprising and, like, best moments.
Because
you don't expect it.
Yeah.
Not even necessarily from this movie specifically, but I wasn't expecting that from a broad, silly comedy from 1985.
What were you going to say?
I'm going to say there's a couple I would say three or four different styles of comedy on display in this
movie. I was going to say that, because I feel like there are certainly elements. I feel like that is the sort of thing I expect from a broad comedy.
Yeah.
I think the fact is this movie is also kind of trafficking in a sort of a slightly more realistic comedy at some points, too. And that's what kind of I feel like is incongruous.
I think that, like, it's got, so that you have, like, really, like, silly physical humor and visual gags, like driving through the map, and the bit where it pans through all of the, like, skulls on pikes, and then it's, like, one of them is
Getty Watanabe's face,
looking through, like, physical comedy, like, smashing the bottle, but it doesn't smash, and, like, the girl trying to, like, stab with her nails, but they, like, end up, like, in the,
like,
bar.
Like, yeah, jammed in the bar service, and she can't pull them out.
And then sometimes it is, like, trying to be, like, witty, and maybe even a little, like, haha political.
Yeah.
Funny. But, like, and then there's, like, the really absurdist stuff, like driving through the map and the reading the subtitles where it's like,
now we're airplane, basically. Right. Right. So it's just, like, it's not really picking a consistent comic tone, I think, is kind of the biggest. And I think the parts that work best are the biggest, most ridiculous parts. Mm-hmm. And so it's really kind of just a slog to then just sort of sit through, you know, 10 minutes of just sort of like Tom Hanks kind of being a little bit of an asshole to Rita Wilson and her just being like, oh no, Tom Hanks, like, I have actual work to do. And he's just like, whoa, like, let me buy you a drink later, Rita Wilson. And then, like, Getty Watanabe's like, hey, you fucking asshole, like, she doesn't like you, blah, blah, blah. She's like, okay, like, this is the boilerplate shit that I expected from this movie.
And also, like, some of the comedy is more successful than others, but, like, there's this whole subplot about Tom Tuttle being an expert in psychological manipulation and then, like, getting immediately brainwashed by communism, but it's, like, a very, like, root one take on what communism is.
Right.
Like, no nuance.
Well, right.
You can tell it's almost more informed by, like, very propagandistic.
Yes, of course.
Because you just see these people in, like, the uniform, the dark kind of greenish uniforms with, like, just the red square and a lot of the matching caps and
talking about the People's Army and
right.
Yeah.
And then, you know, there's that whole bit where, like, John Candy in the throes of his brainwashing is, like, standing on the bridge talking about how, like, colonialism is exploitation. And, you know, watching it in 2025, you're like, I'm sorry, but where's the lie? These are true things.
Yeah, right. Yeah, I mean, obviously, like, as we said, this movie's not going to have an interesting or nuanced take on communism or socialism, because this is from the 80s, set in the 60s. So really, that was never going to happen. But there is a little bit of good comic material that comes from it. I kind of like that the communist troops are singing the Washington State fight song that Tom Tuttle was singing to himself in the beginning. Like, as they're driving toward the bridge at the end of the movie, they're all singing the fight song.
I liked the bits where, I feel like they don't underline it very much, but I like the bits where Rita Wilson is, like, usually swapping words around when she's speaking Thai.
Mm-hmm.
And I like the bits where it's like, she's talking about some medicine that someone has to take, and it comes out as like, you need to take this so we can kill you.
No, it's something like she's talking about boiling water kills the germs. That's why we want to kill you or something like that. Those are, like, decent enough comic bits.
The thing I appreciated about it, it's not, like, you know, earth-shattering comedy, but I did just think it's a joke about the situation without it being expletive or punching down at someone. Do you know what I mean?
Right.
It's,
well, yes. Thankfully, we do get a lot of that, too. So don't worry.
Thankfully,
yeah.
Especially.
Yeah, I know. Mercifully. I was worried when I was watching this for the first time, I was worried that we would not get a character who confused L and R sounds. And so I was so relieved when Lucille showed up and pronounced her name as Roussier.
Right.
Confusing Tom Hanks very much.
Right. Well,
like, I just like, so, oh, thank God. And sat back down.
And then, because we can just jump into it then, because these are linked, I think. As things.
Well, okay, but just to speak on as like a comedy thing, first of all, I think there's kind of a difference between, say, Getty Watanabe's character and what we get from like Lucille or Chung Mi as like the drug lords, right? Where I think Getty Watanabe is still playing a character who is kind of like a stereotype in some sense, where, you know, he's not speaking, he's speaking English, but he's not speaking English. What's the word I'm looking for?
Maybe not 100% fluency.
Right. But he's, you understand what he's saying. He's getting the message across and everything like that. And then you have people like Lucille, who is like speaking complete gibberish, basically, and no one can understand what the fuck she's trying to convey.
You can make the argument that Getty Watanabe or Atune exist. Like, you can talk about him as a character. I don't know that you can really do that with Lucille, who's mostly just there.
Lady Deathstrike.
But for a lot of bad
about
racial jokes.
Like Chung Mi, who is the third option, where he speaks entirely in like proverbs that don't
make sense. Right. Which is one of the things that could almost be a joke too. Like, it's a joke that doesn't entirely work because I feel like the idea of an East Asian person who speaks entirely in proverbs is kind of an American invention, probably.
Yes.
So it's not really a joke because it's a fallacy that we've made up ourselves, you know?
Yes.
But like, I do kind of like at the end when he's talking to fucking Tim Thomerson, whatever the hell her name is, and he's saying like a bunch of nonsense as like Tim Thomerson saying about like,
we must do the things that need to get done.
Right. And
the things that we need to get done will not get done.
Yes. And Tim Thomerson's like, yeah, sure. Yes. Which I do think is kind of funny, even though it's sort of, you know, it's like, I don't remember where this came from.
It's like fortune cookie.
Right.
Just knowledge.
Right. Yeah. But it's also this thing that, who is it? Dan Harmon. I've heard him talk about the idea of if you are writing a scene that takes place at, say, a party, and you have a rich guy who comes in wearing a top hat and a monocle and a cane, it's not funny for then another character to be like, hey, this guy looks like Mr. Peanut, am I right? Because you've set this up to be like, yeah, of course he fucking looks like Mr. Peanut. You've created a character who looks like Mr. Peanut.
Right.
So then to have another character be like, look at this fuckhead over here. It's just, it's not funny, and it feels like the same thing kind of here. Yeah, he speaks in ridiculous proverbs because we've made up this conceit that he speaks in ridiculous proverbs.
Right.
So like, it's not entirely consistently funny, but it's a little funny.
Yeah.
Although, is it meant to speak to assumptions people would have had at the time about Asian people?
No, of course not. I don't think this is a subversive take on.
No, that's not what I mean at all. I mean, did they create? I don't think they're trying to be subversive. I'm saying, did they think this would be funny because people at the time would have already assumed this was true about Asian people?
Perhaps.
Like, oh, haha, look, they did the thing.
He's doing a thing where he speaks in weird,
like, weird proverbs.
Because, I mean, think about wasn't there the whole, like, the ad about laundry detergent was, like,
ancient
Chinese secret.
I mean, I do, like, that is just, again, like, one of the stereotypes we've had about East Asian people. They're celestials. They understand, like, the stars and all these crazy mystic...
Ancient wisdom.
Right. So it's just one of those things where, like, of course, because, like, they have this ancient wisdom, they're speaking an inscrutable tongue, like, you know, they're saying, like, phrases that we don't understand but have symbolic logic to them and just that bullshit.
I did also just enjoy that another just bit of comedy that was present that just didn't feel mean, I guess, or at least not mean to a whole group of people. I just love the completely inexplicable choice to put Chang Mi in the just long blonde wig.
Is it blonde? I thought it was white.
It's white.
Like an Andy Warhol style wig, basically.
And I do just love the way that Tom Hanks throws the line away, but like, oh, your hair looks ridiculous. It was just,
What I like about it is because it's when he comes in to play poker and he's dismissive of this guy at first, and then Atune is like, you can't be, this is like a fucking
crazy drug lord,
he'll kill you. And I was like, oh, sorry. I mean, you can, of course, in the game, but your hair does look ridiculous. Like, you're just like, I'm sorry, but I respect that you're a drug lord, but...
But like, come on.
Admit.
Yeah, we all have to agree here. What's going on with the hair?
Yeah.
But it also feels like, these could have very well been scripted lines that Tom Hanks is just delivering as though they're sort of off the cuff. But then you have like shit later on where when he meets Lucille and he's mentioning something like, oh, like, what, you're his bodyguard. Like, what are you, some sort of a chubby chaser or something like that? Just sort of, then also later he's like, so he's going to have like a penis, like a cocktail weenie, right?
Yes.
It's like, okay, like, This isn't funny. Like, it's not even, like, this is racist or offensive. It's just, like, although, this is not that funny.
It very well could be.
Yeah, no, it could be. But I'm also just saying that the biggest sin that this commits is just there's not a joke there. You're just sort of being like, so I think he has a tiny penis. Is that true? And it's like, I don't know. Yeah, okay, sure. Maybe he does. Who cares?
I see what you're saying. There's not really much of a joke.
No, it's just, yeah, it's just sort of being like, this guy's a little overweight, isn't he? Like, yeah, he is. Okay, so what? Anyway, so yeah, that's the sort of shit that doesn't work for me kind of at all in this movie. Just these sort of more attempts at, I guess, quote unquote, grounded humor.
Right.
All kind of falls flat.
Especially just because, like we mentioned, the weirder, more meta, or more kind of like the broader crazy stuff is way more successful.
There's a lot of goofy stuff that I feel like is not fully realized. We were talking about the bit where Lucille keeps trying to seduce and kill him, and Atun keeps sort of popping up from places.
Right, he pops up from behind a window, and he's like, no, don't do it. And Tom X is like, go away.
Yeah.
And then he pops out of a trap door on the floor and is like, hey, I'm telling you, don't do it. Tom X is like, no, close. And he should have like followed like a trap door in the ceiling. He like sticks his head through or like opens a cabinet and is like, hey, no, Tom X,
no. He opens
it
in a glass.
Yeah, so Kenny like, no.
It was giving me Airplane, but also like Naked Gun. And I'm like, I really wish we had more of that energy.
It really needed to be a sillier. I think when it was most successful was when it was being sillier.
I agree.
Yes.
There's also something I think you can say about this movie's attempt to, I don't want to say it's a serious take on anything going on in East Asia at the time, but it's trying to deal with things that would have been going on East Asia at the time, where you have a drug lord and you have the communist influences. And the whole premise of this movie basically is that they're trying to build a bridge across a river, ostensibly for this village. It might be just that the bridge is only there because the CIA wants the bridge to be there so that they can take out the communist army.
We also have the person that tells us that is the CIA asset who is working with the drug lord. So he tells us this will improve their lives like 100% or whatever.
Right.
Do we know that for a certain? No.
Well, so no, here's the thing. So he says that, right? You're right about that. Then at the end, whenever they're talking about blowing up the bridge, and you have Rita Wilson speaking to the entire community about how, like, look, I know this sucks. I know we just built this. We have to blow up the bridge. At some point, Getty Watanabe says they were never too big on that bridge anyway. So one must assume that this village is sort of being used as a patsy in this entire scheme for two warring factions. One, the communist armies, whoever they represent, want this bridge so that they can spread the word of communism. The CIA wants the bridge so that they can, I think, go and take out the communist armies. But they're allying themselves with Chung Mi, the drug lord, so that he can then have access to, like, you know, do more drug shit, make more money and all that shit like that. That's fine, I think. That's some strangely sort of serious shit to kind of get into in this movie, a movie that otherwise is a little, like, frivolous and goofy.
And like Lee pointed out, it points into this idea of this village is not, no one's really thinking of this village and its needs or is really doing anything for its benefit. Even the people who are brought there to build this bridge are ultimately doing it for larger powers with much more nefarious ideas.
Yeah, it's, so it could have been that, like, maybe the villagers didn't really see a problem with it because that was just how they've lived.
Right.
And so, like, they didn't have much of a reason to think that they needed a bridge, but having the bridge would have been really fucking cool.
Right.
Like, you know?
Yeah, no, and I mean, and again, because we don't really check in with the villagers, really.
Yeah.
Like, we don't know one way or the other if this would have been beneficial
but
or not.
But for certain, what is for certain is that everyone in this movie that is interested in making the bridge doesn't care about the village.
Right, no, that is true. And I think, like, that's kind of an interesting angle that the movie sort of
plays with.
Sort of plays with a little bit. Like, it probably could have played with a little bit more, but by and large, it doesn't really feel the need to go into it. I mean, the thing even, like, you, Lee, had said is in the first scene where they show that old man standing there, Tim Thomerson or whoever, says, oh, this old man has, like, never set foot on the other side of that river.
Right.
You were like, do they not have boats? Could we not fashion a raft?
Mm-hmm.
And again, this is the CIA guy, so maybe he was lying. Maybe he's trying to sort of guilt them into like, oh, we should build this bridge. Very important to do so. If you do say that, you feel like at some point later, Rita Wilson or John Kenny should talk to this guy and be like, are you thrilled there's going to be a bridge? And he's like, what are you talking about? I've been over there, like, hundreds of times. Like, we have boats. Like,
that's my boat over there.
Right, yeah, exactly. Like, this is a thing I've done. Like, I don't know what the hell you guys are talking about. And it could kind of, you know, make you think, like, oh, why are we doing this? Like, what's happening here, actually? The other thing I have, and I think this kind of ties in with the idea of the sort of, like, more realistic stuff that this movie tries to deal with, is, look, I'm not an engineer. I don't get how bridges are built.
Yeah.
I'm going to be completely honest with you guys. don't know about bridges, can't build one.
When he was talking about the Tom Thomerson guy or whatever, Tim Thomerson
Tom
was talking...
Tom Toddle. Get his name.
No. We're talking about the CIA guy, the actor whose name is Tim Thomerson.
I was about to say, put some respect
I know Tom Toddle from Tacoma, Washington, of course.
I would never besmirch him.
Yeah.
But he says at one point, like, hey, we got everything you need. We'll just drop you three off with these supplies and go. And I was like, fuck. That seems like a nightmare scenario. That literally sounds like something I would dream about of, like...
It feels like one of those, like, science experiments from high school. Where
yeah,
it's like,
you're playing Minecraft.
Right.
Don't punch trees.
But I'm just like, what the fuck, man? Like,
right,
I wouldn't know what to
it's
do.
It's like, you have to build a bridge out of straws that can support the weight of a student.
And when they
here's
said, like,
the
yeah, we left you blueprints, have been like...
Tom Tuttle's an engineer.
Right.
He should be fine.
Right.
But he's sitting there obsessively sharpening pencils and then,
right.
like... hammering 18 nails into one plank of wood.
Right. So what I'm saying is I can see a world where someone has given them plans and are like, if you just follow these plans to a T, you can build the bridge. It's fine. It's easy. That's probably something that happens, right? You probably do have just people there who kind of a little bit know what they're doing and they're just provided with plans and just are like, look, this is very easy. Just do everything that we tell you to and you'll have a bridge. No problem.
Right.
What I have a problem with, I guess, is that I'm so confused as to why this is the bridge that matters so much. I'm so confused as to why the drug lord didn't build his own bridge. I'm so confused as to why the CIA doesn't just build their own bridge. Why doesn't the communist army build their own bridge? Why is destroying this bridge prevent Chung Mi from ever coming to this town to seek retribution, which we already know he can do because he drives up in the beginning of the movie for the poker game. So it's like, how is this, like, I feel like he's just going to drive over and be like, hey, Tom Hanks, you fucked up my drug business. I'm going to kill you now.
And Atune tells him he comes by the village.
Right. So that's what I don't understand.
He's on that side of the, he needs access to carry drugs to the other side. So
right, no, I understand. I understand why he needs the bridge. I'm saying that he can still get to the village, wherever his camp or his castle is. He can still get to this village because we see him do that before the bridge is built. So it just occurs to me that if Tom Hanks destroys this bridge, Chung Mi is going to be very angry and seek retribution against Tom Hanks.
I guess.
And it just
yeah.
feels to me like you have not solved any problem that this movie has set up. You know, like the problems you have set up are like the CIA wants to go this way, the drug people want to go this way, the communists want to go this way. You destroyed the bridge. Great. How are they not going to build another bridge 2 weeks from now?
Because I think ultimately it's not about that. It's ultimately about Tom Hanks doing something right.
No, I understand that that's the point of it, but the fact of the matter is you've added all these other problems and then you just walk away, dust your hands off and are like, and now the drug lords can never come here. And it's like, no, they can. We've seen them.
It's actually quite
how is this the end of your movie?
I think I have answers to at least the CIA question.
Yeah.
The CIA doesn't build bridges. That's why they use the Peace Corps.
I think, no, and I think I can 100% believe that the CIA is just doing this quietly and they don't want to, like, get their hands dirty.
Yeah.
So they're like, hey, Peace Corps, it would be really great if you built a bridge for this town. They need it so badly.
Yeah.
And then they can just sort of come over. But again, the drug lord could probably figure it out. I'm going to assume that whoever this commissar is representing has built a bridge at one point in their country.
But then why wouldn't Chinese people...
What's that?
Why wouldn't Chinese people just do it?
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
Like,
it's just it boggles the mind
again,
as to how this is.
Tom Tuttle on his side.
True.
Yeah.
Maybe they don't have an engineer. Maybe that's
need
the
engineers.
Issue.
I guess
you need
so.
Tom Tuttle from Tacoma, Washington.
You got people that grow opium. You got people that refine opium.
Yeah.
You got bodyguards that do some kind of unspecified form of wrestling.
Yep.
But seemingly
definitely
sumo?
Not sumo.
Yeah, definitely not sumo. They're clearly
We'd
not
be
sumo.
Way off.
Yeah. Yeah, that would be insane. Why would a sumo wrestler be there? That wouldn't make sense at all.
Yeah.
But that's kind of my point, is that I think because this story is kind of trafficking in the idea that this is also a little bit of a more, like, I don't want to say serious, but like a more grounded comedy, then at the end of the movie, I'm just kind of like, is this a solution?
And I don't know that Chung Mi has an army, per se.
I don't know if he has an army either, but I think he clearly has a lot of money.
He could, but I think that, like, he couldn't, in terms of your point of, like, why are they not afraid of Chung Mi coming in? I think that, like, a village of people could probably overpower Chung Mi's, like, couple dudes.
I think Chung Mi has a lot of guns, though. I mean, he clearly has a castle. He has Lady Deathstrike. He's got a bunch of sumo wrestlers.
But, I mean, it's not like he's already got the village under his grip. He doesn't...
No, but I'm just saying that, like, it seems like he could, if he wanted to, come in and really fuck this place up.
And that might be a problem, but it's just, you know... I think that it's more the communist army is the bigger threat. And they
right.
seem like
and that's perfectly fine. I think it's perfectly fine if we discount Chung Mi as a threat, because then we do still have the fact that the communist army could probably build their own bridge.
I do find it to be an interesting and, like... It is interesting that the issues they're touching, right? And it does have way more texture than you probably expect for how the rest of the movie is. It just doesn't feel like this movie is equipped to really do much with it, or at least not much that... I would almost say, like, had they gone deeper on those things, I would imagine it would probably become a lot less funny and a lot more just, like, Well, then why is this story a comedy?
Sure, no, I agree with you. I feel like that's sort of the movie's kind of perhaps biggest failing from a narrative standpoint is giving so much time to these threats when it could have dealt in something entirely different. Mm-hmm. Maybe it's another village. Maybe there's just another village who they're at odds with,
right,
who's across the way. And if they build the bridge, actually, then that makes it much easier for the other village to come in and take them all out. So it's just, I don't know. That's me spitballing.
Yeah,
I feel like there's any number of concepts that you could do that are not the communist armies and the CIA and the drug lords all want to use this bridge, you know?
Right.
It's just like, once you start to get into that territory, it's like, now you have to kind of really do the work and be like, what happens now? Like,
mm-hmm.
you're telling me that once this bridge is blown up, everyone's just like, well, there
Next.
It goes. It just goes back to their business.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
I don't know. Anyway.
Would now be a good time to maybe talk about the racist elephant in the room?
Chris, it would be a great time to talk about the racist elephant in the room. By which you mean that elephant in the corner who's been saying shady things
yeah.
about Asian people for a while. Despite
and
the fact that I think that's an Indian elephant, you would think that an Indian elephant would have a more enlightened view
think,
on racism, but like...
Not
you know,
a lot of intersectionalism in...
That is certainly
Asia.
True. No, that's
well,
certainly
I,
true. A lot of racism.
You know,
a lot
that,
of racism within India.
Yeah,
this.
That's also certainly true, too.
I, mean,
I guess I expect too much from our Indian elephant friends.
I just think we were lucky to get one of the elephants that pushed a tree over in the movie.
Well, that is true. Yeah. Elephant number two did a very good job pushing
right?
a tree
good
over.
Work.
I see. My mind, the elephant was in that corner of the room.
I mean,
is like a Harvey scenario. We're like, nah, she's over there.
Yeah.
Oh, you want to give him a drink? He's in the corner there.
But yeah, as one might expect for a comedy made in 1985 that is taking place in Thailand, the way that it handles Asian people in general, Thai people specifically, Chinese people, really just any
well,
of it is pretty poor.
Yeah, I feel like I guess the one plus about the villagers barely being characters is that it's not particularly mean to them, you know,
not to them
in a way.
Specifically.
Right, because it's sort of like we almost spend no time with them,
correct.
So it's not like you really get to make fun of them.
I see what you're saying.
Yeah.
It's like,
because
on the one hand, they're not characters, which sucks, but on the other hand, if they were,
right.
then they would have been subjected to probably even worse.
Right, like it's
writing,
almost lucky
so.
That you've been ignored by this
yeah.
movie, because now no one's going to present you in a bad light.
They dodged a bullet.
Right. Like the most you really have is that village elder who is blind,
who just kind of
and
is
Getty
like,
Watanabe.
Comedic prop.
Right, right.
And
yeah, right, right, yeah. They're not characters. They're
no.
just settings.
Isn't necessarily... I don't want to say it's not about his race, because it kind of is, but I guess he's a comedic prop, which isn't great, but it's not like... It's not like they trot him in just so you can laugh at him. He's sort of just sort of a...
No, it's... And it's more...
I don't know how to put him.
I would say, like, it's more just funny that he's, like, an old man who's blind and maybe just not part of the scenes. Like, he just
yeah.
looked like that.
Wandering
not,
around, yeah, like, kind
not
of standing there.
Because
yeah.
he maybe doesn't understand English, and so he's just kind of, like, is in these scenes, but is just, like, chilling and not,
right.
and is just not there. Not part of the... Physically there, mentally not there.
Right.
Right.
Doing his own thing. The Lord knows what's going on in that head.
Who knows?
Then I guess you would have Getty Watanabe, though.
Yes. And I also want to get into Lucio.
No, I mean, I'm speaking in terms of, like, the town itself.
Yeah, yeah.
Getty Watanabe, whose entire shtick is that he was considered to be, like, the smartest kid in this village and was sent
mm-hmm.
to an American school in Bangkok.
Yeah.
yeah. And then came back to the village. So he can speak English, and he, like, understands kind of what's going on with them and is able to effectively talk to the people in the Peace Corps. We get the scene of John Candy being like, you're going to chop down this tree and use it to build a bridge. And all the village people are like, no, they'll start, like, walking away. And he's like, no, come back. You're chopping down the bridge. And Getty Watanabe's like, hey, asshole, they're not going to chop down that tree because that's a sacred tree. They believe spirits live in it. They're not going to want to do that. Like, find another fucking tree. I have to say, like, on one level... I respect that this character is showing up and being like, hey, you fucking dummies. Like, you don't know shit
yeah.
about what you're doing over here. In that sense, I think it's, like, a better character than it could have been. Because, like, sure, I'm not saying he's, like, a sensitive, nuanced, two-dimensional take on a villager who speaks English. But I do like that he immediately is showing up, like, boy, like, you guys are going about this shit all fucking wrong. Like, you don't know the
mm-hmm.
first fucking thing about what you're doing here. I relate to that because I'm like, boy, I also think these people are idiots and don't know what they're doing.
And throughout the movie, he just calls Tom Hanks asshole.
Yeah,
right.
And when he's like being washed up and found like presumed dead, and that she's like whatever, Lawrence, and he's just like asshole.
Yeah, yes, yeah,
exactly.
Yeah.
I think that the character, I appreciate that also they made the character like kind of a weaselly, conniving guy too, where
mm-hmm.
like he's smart, but also like ostensibly representing the villagers, but also like he's kind of in with Lawrence on like, oh, like Lawrence can get the hookups with like good alcohol. And
right, right. Yeah. Like it benefits me to hang with
yeah,
Lawrence.
Yeah, yeah. So I'm going to like play up this relationship.
Yeah. And so you know, this is certainly, I think, better than Long Duk Dong, the Getty Watanabe
yeah.
character. So I guess it has that going for it. There is certain still elements of he is kind of desexualized, as a lot of Asian characters are. Like, he's whining about how he's never had sex with a woman before. Yep. There's the scene where they're doing some sort of kickboxing and his shorts get kind of knocked off, and it's just sort of like, you're naked now.
There's also the fact that all of the large non-sumo bodyguards seem to want to fuck him.
Yes. Right, which is a little weird.
And he kind of alludes later when he's like, I had to let those fat men touch me, and you're like,
Right, and it's one of those things where it's like, okay, like, I don't know.
I mean,
like,
it's not meant to be subtle. Like, they
certainly not.
Sexually attracted to
him. Like, yeah, they're very horny for him, clearly.
I mean, I guess that's supposed to be a joke?
Well, I was going to say,
gay is funny.
Right, it is supposed to be a joke. I think my question is, I'm not really sure, is the joke that, like, these big burly men are homosexuals, or is the joke that Getty Watanabe is kind of feminine, and therefore these other men view him as, like, a lady? Or is it both? Do we have both that we get to deal with?
I think it's also something to contend with that, you know, white Americans wrote and directed this movie. Do you think there is that racist assumption that Asian men are more feminine, Asians in general more submissive.
Sure.
There's also kind of a specific Thailand thing too, right?
Yes, I think that's
true. Yes, femininity. Yes. Which I was very glad we did not necessarily openly.
Right, credit where credit's due.
thank you for not doing that.
Right.
So as much as I think Getty Watanabe is probably the best we get, you know, for all of its good things and flaws, I think that's probably the least bad. So yeah, I kind of also, let's maybe talk also just about like where it goes really wrong.
Well, Changmi's whole quotillion of friends.
I mean, that whole palace is like, it's like a fucking,
it's like a Fu Manchu sort of shit.
It's also like that place in northern Boston.
Kowloon. It's like Kowloon. Yeah, it is like Kowloon.
Do you know what else it was giving me vibes of? It was giving me vibes of the drug lord scenes from The Shadow.
It is a lot of like, similar to Lady Deathstrike, Alec Baldwin did have horrifyingly long fingernails.
To like scoop opium or whatever. Yeah, an opium lord who lives in this fortress. He had,
who is also like Chinese.
He's Chinese, which I know that.
That's very possible. I'm not saying it's impossible that a Chinese drug lord would be operating out of Thailand. Like, certainly not insane.
And you know, I feel like in some of these ways, I'm going to wade into stuff I don't know enough about to talk about. But I do know enough to say, I really doubt a Chinese drug lord in Thailand has sumo wrestlers as
as
his guards.
I don't know if these are supposed to be something that I'm just not familiar with. Visually, they read as sumo wrestlers, so that just makes me think that someone on the production team was like, sumo wrestlers are in Thailand, right? Like, big guys and little, you know, whatever you call, like, the outfit that they're wearing. Like, that's a thing that exists in Thailand, right? And everyone was just like, probably, I guess so. Yeah, so they're just like, great, like, they're the bodyguards. A bunch of fat guys in little underpants are just going to, like, hang around there all day. And that, I'm going to assume, I don't know for sure, I'm going to assume that that's not entirely accurate.
Right.
What do I know? I could be wrong. To me, it reads as sumo wrestler. Maybe this is based on a real thing. I don't know enough to tell you.
Did these filmmakers give enough of a shit to do research? My assumption is probably not a lot.
I would agree.
Then my next thought is they chose sumo because that's a recognizable Asian thing to Americans at that time.
Right.
If you had to make a list of what that would be.
Right.
That's probably close to the top of the list. As we said earlier, he speaks almost exclusively in proverbs, or this sort of like Yoda-ish kind of backwards phrasing.
Right. And which there's like the one good bit, which I can't remember if we talked about or not, whenever he is first meeting with Tom Hanks, he says something about time is money and is opium or something like that. And then Tom Hanks, he later says something about like, well, time is money. And Tom Hanks is like, I thought opium was money. Or so, like, he's like, opium is time. He's like, well, then what's time again?
And he goes, money is money.
Yeah, right. Yeah. It is kind of funny. That's also the sort of thing you could imagine being a joke, not even in like an Asian sort of sense where like, you could imagine like a mob boss being like, time is money and drugs is money. And that's supposed to be like, wait, now explain this to me again.
That could have been in a Wall Street movie as far as weird.
Right. So like, which I think that is a good bit. That's funny. Then you also have things like Lucille, who is his bodyguard, who seems to just be, like I said, Lady Deathstrike from X-Men, in that she has long fingernails or attachments on her fingernails that are claw-like.
Well, in one scene, it is just fingernails. And then in another scene, like when she shows up at the little bar he made, there's definitely like added blades.
I think they were always like that. Because when you first see her, she's always wearing gloves.
But then she takes them off at one point, and it's just long nails.
I would need to see it again. I'm not sure.
And then, oddly, she doesn't scratch him in that scene. She just sort of, like, crushes his hand.
Because I think she still has gloves on at that point.
Does she?
I'm pretty sure. Well, anyways.
Maybe I'm misremembering.
Regardless, who cares?
Up until that point, obviously it's not a sensitive portrayal of Asian people, but at least they didn't do the R's for L's thing.
Yeah.
Then when she comes on the scene, you realize, oh, they just gave all those lines to her.
Right.
So like you said, it's like Lucerol.
Right, Roussier.
Wasn't doing it right.
Roussier.
Roussier.
Yeah, she's like, and he's like, where did you get that name? He's like, my mother's English.
And you're just like,
oh boy, okay, here we go. Here it fucking goes, man.
I don't know that I could say what's culturally accurate and what's not there, but
I'm going to say there's probably not a lot culturally accurate about Lucerol.
I'm going to assume
you're
correct.
I'm going to go on a limb.
But it feels icky.
Right.
Interacting with that character.
No, I mean, also because her character, she's almost at like a sci-fi level of aesthetic, where she has like these huge pointy shoulders on her dress and she's wearing elaborate patterns drawn on
her
face. Right. And she has these long sort of claws. It almost feels like if she were to show up in, you know, John Carter or something,
right.
He would be like, yeah, this makes sense.
Or I think we were discussing during the movie, it seemed like she would have been an odd job type character,
right.
In, like a really bad
right.
John.
And she's also aesthetically kind of half 80s, despite the fact that this is ostensibly movie in the 60s.
I mean,
has like sort of big hair.
It's the hair.
Right. She looks like someone in a music video.
Yeah, the makeup.
She wears
yeah.
a lot of rayon and like polyester
yeah.
as well.
Yeah.
Kind of looks
yeah.
like.
So she is kind of the most jarring element, like the most this does not belong here element, even when compared to sumo wrestlers.
To call her the worst of it, I don't know if I can say, but hers was the one where I would feel like I was cringing the most often.
No, I agree.
Seeing.
I mean, I feel like also, even if you eliminated all of her dialogue, you would still be sort of getting a little bit of, like, the Dragon Lady stereotype.
Absolutely.
At least she would be less of an embarrassment, you know? At
I
least
guess.
This character would be sort of... She's still a stereotype, but at least she's a stereotype of we're scared of her and not a stereotype of, like, oh, this fucking dummy can't even pronounce
right.
English correctly.
I think, like, visually she has to change a lot.
Yeah.
She's
yes.
too, like, insane looking.
No, I agree.
Upset.
I agree. I think there is a world where he can have a female bodyguard who is, like, super competent and will fucking kill you. And will also maybe seduce you
without
as part of that.
This.
Right. Which, again, feels so much like you said, sort of every James Bond movie where some, you know, Famke Janssen.
Yeah. You need to give her, like, a weird gimmick.
Right. No. Yeah. I guess, like, the claws are her closest to her gimmick.
Yeah.
Well, so obviously, you know, we're calling her Lady Deathstrike, and we were kind of joking, like, oh, do you think that character might have... like, come from this just because, you know, Lady Deathstrike, also an Asian lady with...
long claws.
Long
yeah.
claws under her nails or whatever. But it was also giving me, like, Street Fighter character. Like,
it is,
imagine
it is.
If she was in the
yeah.
Street Fighter movie. You don't have to change any.
Right, no,
yeah.
she would, like, you could plop her in perfectly and it would not matter.
I feel like she could have, like, a snake and she...
Right,
oh,
right, she would be, like, wearing the snake and occasionally, like, a snake would be, like, she'd, like, throw it off at you
yeah,
or something.
Yeah, yeah.
You mean just like Patricia Velasquez in Return of the
yeah,
Mummy.
Yeah, right, exactly.
Yeah.
Mummy Returns.
Mummy.
Let's not be so formal,
guys. The Return of the Mummy. I just want to come back to this wrestling real quick.
Yeah.
It's more than likely that they were sumo wrestlers, but it's not necessarily unlikely that there would be sumo wrestling in Thailand. It may have been popular then at the time. It is certainly popular in other countries now.
Yeah, no, I mean, like I said,
yeah.
I'm not saying it's
it
impossible.
It could just be that he's a fan of sumo wrestling.
Yeah, I'm just saying that to
has
me...
has a cabal of them.
Right, it just sort of feels a little bit like these are just the Asian stereotypes that we
yes.
know, and so we're going to throw
it's,
them all
it's
in.
Certainly, yeah. It's worthy of giving a side eye to it when it's done in an American movie,
yeah.
and you're like, are you just throwing Asian
right.
grab bag stuff in?
Yes, well, because it's not even like... We're already assuming that this isn't a legitimate or real, like, representation
yeah.
of Asian
right.
culture. So if it's coming from Americans who don't know anything about it... We kind of got into this a little earlier, but was there any other pieces of comedy that you guys wanted to highlight that worked for you? Was
no.
there any other
no.
part of the movie that you felt like worked for you that we haven't gotten to yet?
I think the general... I mean, I think that the general idea... I mean, you talked about it, of, like, the... The premise of, like, the bridge being just a way, like nobody actually wanting to help the village and the bridge just being a tool by three different people is a solid bone.
I agree.
For your movie. Like, it's a solid skeleton, but it is not realized properly.
Yeah, no, I also think that I feel like that idea, which is a good idea, is sort of at odds with the goofier elements
it
of the
is,
movie,
yeah.
too.
I think
so,
you kind of have to pick what you're doing.
Right, you can either make, like, a
yeah.
comedy that also has to deal with the fact that everyone is
yeah,
using
yeah.
this bridge to their advantage, or you can do an absurd,
like,
movie where you don't even deal with, like, the implications of this.
To go back to, like, Stripes, like, everything that happens in Stripes is just, like one stupid fuck-up after the other,
right.
where it's, like, they end up in charge of this project... out of sheer luck, and then because they're really still fuck-ups, half of them get instantly taken by...
Right.
They accidentally drive over the border and get taken in by the, like, Soviets.
Right.
And then have to get stealth rescued.
Right, right.
The rest of them. And it's kind of a miracle that everything works out for the best. And they get, like, decorated in the end, but it's like, actually none of this would have happened if you'd never put this joke team...
Right, exactly, exactly.
That whole movie works a lot better because... It isn't like they go over and they find some like Soviet nefarious plot.
Right.
It's just that
they cleaned up their right. You cleaned up your own mess, basically.
Yes.
Yeah. Like, good job. You did what you should do.
But there still would not have been a mess there to clean up. Had
yeah.
You.
Right. Right. Yeah.
I forget the detail where like maybe they also foil something. Well, but like again, everything that happened is because they fuck up. So it's different in that respect. It's unfortunate. Because it's two different good directions that you could either do, like, an absurd comedy or you could do the story where, like, you know, there are three parties that want to build a bridge and none of them are good.
Right, right.
It would almost be good bones for, like, a more sharper satire.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, something less goofy.
It's certainly nothing that's going to get made on about Thailand in the 80s.
No, yeah. Certainly not. All right, shall we get into actors and characters?
Yeah, sure.
Let's start with our boy Tom Hanks.
Truly an insane voice.
Yeah, I think just an insane choice, too,
yeah.
Honestly.
Yeah.
You know, like I had said, if you were casting sort of this sort of upper crust New England wasp, you would not think to cast
Tom
Hanks.
I guess
Hanks.
We didn't know that. We didn't know
I guess,
that.
But I mean, I feel like even Tom Hanks' vibe, like you could look
True.
At Tom Hanks and be like, this does not look like a guy who went to private school in New England.
No.
You know, Tom Hanks is, he's a good actor. He can do a lot of things well. This is not what you ask of him to
right.
do. Especially if you look at George Plimpton and the woman who plays his wife. George Plimpton does that joke where he's like, I've been despondent since the day I brought you home from the orphanage. For a second, I was like, oh, okay, that might make sense. But then it's a joke because Tom Hanks is like, I'm your son. I'm not adopted. He's like, please, just let me have this fantasy.
Yeah.
When he first said that, the first time I watched, rather, I just thought, like, oh, that's some weird exposition to throw in right now.
Yeah. It's so, I don't know. Like, I don't think he's actively bad, but he's really struggling with trying to do George Plimpton's natural voice as an accent. And Tom Hanks is not a great accent guy.
No.
In
it's
most
just not
respect.
Something you ask him to do.
Right, and that's fine. And I think, like, I can even see a world where Tom Hanks is playing this character as kind of like a smarmy fuck up who gets sort of like who has to go into the Peace Corps for similar reasons because, you know, he's trying to avoid having his kneecaps broken by
right.
the mob or something. I can see that. I think it's just the fact that he's supposed to also be this sort of Tony New England kid is kind of where I'm like, I don't know about that. Yeah.
I do appreciate that despite him being miscast, I felt very committed.
No, he is.
What he was doing, and he was giving it his whole board.
He's game.
His whole game. Should we go to Rita Wilson next?
She's pretty good.
Yeah, she's likewise doing some accent work because she's trying to do sort of a...
Long Island.
Yeah, Long Island, dare I say, Jewish adjacent, because
yeah.
she is wearing a Star of David. This is not me reading into it. She's wearing a Star of David necklace.
I will just say, again, for an 80s movie, they do give it a light touch, at least in comparison to what I might expect, because she does one, not oy vey, she does one, what does she say?
There's some Yiddish word that she tosses in.
And then, then there's the Star of David,
yeah.
But I think that's about it. So it's not like it's like a character shtick she's always doing,
yeah.
which I appreciate.
Yeah.
Low bar, but still.
Right, no. I mean, again, probably not the actor I would think of for the role of, you know, Jewish Long Island young lady, but okay, fine.
I kept thinking, and this would just be a way different direction for the character, but what if you cast someone like Goldie Hawn instead?
I mean, we can't always just keep casting Goldie Hawn in our fish out of water
can't
80s
we?
Movies.
Can't
no,
we?
We can't. We can't.
She's so good at it.
I know, she is.
But yeah, I mean, I like Rita Wilson. It was fun to see baby Rita Wilson hanging out. I appreciate that. Like you said before, I appreciate that they don't keep up the mistaken identity thing into the movie.
Thank Christ.
I actually think it's more interesting to kind of have her go in the direction she does with the CIA guy.
Yeah.
I also appreciate that they didn't, for the female lead in an 80s comedy, didn't make her the TNA or the bimbo, really. She's at least ostensibly, you don't see much of it, but she's at least, like, she's serious about her job.
No, she's
really
confident.
There to try to do something.
Yeah.
I feel like I feel like it would have been very easy for this movie to make her into a joke.
Yeah.
As in to be like, can you believe someone cares about this shit?
Yeah.
She's a little guileless in that she's taken in quite easily, but she is also good at what she does and doesn't... Once she kind of finds out that she's got the wool over her eyes, she's like, I'll fuck her off with this guy.
Right.
Right.
Get out of here. I'm not interested.
Yeah. And
so there's that.
We do have to thank this movie for giving us Chet Hayes.
Oh my God, really?
I mean, yeah, that's they got married.
It's true, that's
so.
True, that's true, that's true, that's true. Oh, my goodness.
Thank you, volunteers, for giving us...
You think that's how they met?
So they met... I think they met on Bosom Buddies. I think she was in an episode of Bosom Buddies, and they met there, and then they reconnected on the set of Volunteers.
Oh, okay. Well, I mean...
Thank goodness. Where would we be without the founder of...
the real fault.
That's true.
Where
yes.
would we be without the founder of White Boy Summer?
Very true.
John Candy, shall we talk about?
Oh, John Candy.
As John Tuttle from...
Tom
oh, my
John
God.
John Tuttle from Tacoma, Washington.
Yeah, put some respect on his
name. Yeah, seriously.
Sorry, I apologize.
I wish he had more to do.
Yeah, I think he's doing his usual quality work, but it bugs me that he, you know, again, like, this is one of those times where, like, if you see the poster of this movie, it's the three of them kind of, like, linked arms in Thailand. And, okay, it's going to be these three guys trying to do something in Thailand. They volunteered for the Peace Corps. John Candy is out of the movie for a large chunk of it.
Yeah.
He almost immediately gets captured by communist forces, gets immediately brainwashed by them, still is away for a while, comes back and is like, hey, I'm back. And everyone's like, oh, thank goodness you're back, John Candy. But is still kind of not really involved in a lot of the main plot. He pops up occasionally and makes some jokes about communism. And then he doesn't really get involved again until the end of the movie, where he shows up after Tom Hanks and Rita Wilson are like, we have to blow up the bridge. John Candy shows up and is like, I'm going to blow you all up first with a stick of dynamite. And then they, like, you know, knock it out of his hand and deactivate the dynamite and slap some sense into him. Then that's kind of about it.
Right.
So it's not really an effective use of John Candy's talent. I feel like you get a little bit more from the beginning, like when he's on the plane and he's talking to Tom Hanks. It's very much Planes, Trains, and Automobiles, where it's just like he will not leave Tom Hanks alone sort of thing.
And that he literally cannot stop talking.
Right, right.
I love that bit that when Tom Hanks turns around and is literally dictating a telegram to the woman on the plane, he's just, John Candy just keeps on his
just
monologue.
Keeps,
it's great.
And I also like when they're in the helicopter going to the village, he just sort of keeps shouting into the helicopter.
Is this thing on?
Yeah. And he's like, well, put up an American flag, that ought to scare him. And it's just like it's like, that's good stuff. And then it just, we get almost none of that as the movie proceeds.
Again, it's route one, but I wish they had done more with it. But I think it's a solid start to something with having him be, he's bragging about his ability at like psychological manipulation.
Right, and then immediately
and
gets
immediately brainwashed.
Yeah.
I kind of wish they had done a little more with that, found maybe some other kind of level to it. My biggest issue with it is just we don't get enough of him.
Yeah and
he's a great performer.
His talent is kind of wasted.
Yeah, yes. Agreed.
In the stuff he is given, it's very Route 1 stuff.
Much like Kowloon, very Route 1.
Very
much like Kowloon. That's a good joke.
I'm going home. See y'all.
Good night.
That's the best joke in the pod.
Gary Montanabe?
I think he does. I mean, I know that he's being asked to do a lot of stuff that is not kosher.
Let's see that.
As Rita Wilson's character would probably say.
But I think he's doing good work with what he's
doing. I agree. Like, I think it's a less offensive performance than it could have been.
Yes.
It's less offensive than some of the other parts he's been asked to play.
Yeah.
He looks kind of good in this movie. He's looking kind of good, I gotta say.
He's
like,
handsome.
Yeah. It's kind of a snack in
he's
this movie.
I was kind of feeling that way, honestly, about most of our actors. Like, I don't know if I've ever seen John Candy that young.
No, I mean, John Candy, like, he's in pretty good shape in this. You know, he's like a little more trim than you see him later in life. Everyone's looking hot in this movie.
Tom Hanks, you'll never see him in a dinner jacket that often.
No, exactly not.
In a white dinner jacket.
I do love that line where Rita Wilson's like, nice tux,
nice
and she's
like,
it's a dinner jacket. Such a douche. But yeah, I thought Kade Watanabe was great with what he was given. Yeah, I guess it could have always been so much worse. We saw Lung Duk Dong. Was there anyone else you guys wanted
not
to
really
discuss?
I mean,
no, everyone else is such like kind of a minor.
Yeah.
Is it, like, John Reynolds, or the fuck is the name of the CIA guy, like, doesn't
matter.
They're
kind of playing caricatures. Like, his CIA guy's a caricature.
Right, like, he starts off as just kind of, like, serious, then it turns out, like, oh, he's a lunatic.
Bootsy
like,
is a caricature.
Yeah.
My beloved Bootsy.
I can't believe we didn't speak about Bootsy, a character who's in two scenes yet.
I love Bootsy.
Yeah. Chun-Li, Lucille, like, there's not really anything to talk about with these people.
Yeah. Well, because they're not really characters.
Right,
they're,
like, not worth our time.
They're jokes.
Yeah.
Well, with that said,
I want to say real quick, looking to score, this was done by James Horner, who also did the score for...
James Horner does a lot of stuff.
He does do a lot of stuff. Who also did the score for Star Trek 2, which Nicholas Meyer also directed.
Crazy? Did he do Treasure Planet?
No, that's James Newton Howard.
Oh, James Newton Howard.
James Horner does a lot of work, or did a lot of work, rather, with James Cameron. Okay. He's dead now. He died in a helicopter accident several years ago. Yeah, I don't know. I know that he has a tendency to self-plagiarize his own works a lot, and I feel like I had read online that some of the score shows up in other things he did later on, but this came first, so I don't know what to tell you. and I think what little you hear of, there's not a whole lot of score. There's kind of like that main sort of stirring adventure theme you get a lot. Like, yeah. It's just fine.
A lot of the music felt highly incidental.
I'm not saying that it's a good thing, but a lot of composers do that.
Self-plagiarize. Right. I feel it's also one of those things where it's like, I feel like there's a line between self-plagiarizing versus like, this is your shtick, you know, where it's like...
thinking of The Rocketeer.
You might be thinking of The Rocketeer.
Confusing them, but I was.
Which
I should rewatch that movie.
It's a retro-futurist or weird futurist sci-fi stuff. Yeah, it's decent. It doesn't ask for a lot, the score.
No, it doesn't. And there's a lot of needle drops.
Yes.
Being used here, too. So it's not a score-heavy movie, per se.
Yeah. Now, shall we head into fixes, perhaps?
Sure.
Would anyone like to start?
You're looking at me quite pointedly.
Well, I'm sorry. I was going to do one, then the other.
I don't have a lot.
I do not either.
You guys are all lazy. I have two options.
Go for
it. Here we go.
Go for it.
You lazy fuckos. I don't know why I even work with you people anymore. So I've got two ideas. One idea is just a comedy about taking the piss out of those Ivy League assholes and having to deal with reality now that they've graduated college. Because honestly, that was like the one thing that fucking grabbed me about this movie is like, again, everything up until he goes to Thailand. Mm-hmm. So if you just kind of wanted to make it a movie about like this colossal Ivy League fuck up played by Tom Hanks, who realizes that now he's in the real world and has to actually be expected to get shit done without being helped out by his rich father. I don't know. That might be something. I didn't actually think about what that is. That's something. And it's probably a little bit less prone to Asian stereotypes than this movie might be.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's sort of like
one
just
hope.
Right. Yeah. That's kind of just like a ground up focusing on the one thing that I kind of liked in this movie and going with that. The other thought would be, so if you wanted to really kind of do this movie as it was now, first of all, I would set it in the 1980s and almost use it as like a satire of how the ostensible ideals of the Peace Corps have been destroyed along with our own American ideals. And now the organization is run by people who like aren't trying to spread goodwill in a system, but just a bunch of like bureaucrats and self-interested fuckos who are using it for their own purposes. I would make it more of an ensemble comedy with no main focus. And you can maybe also throw some additional characters, some additional like good comedy people of the 1980s in there as well. I think Tom Hanks would just sort of be like a shifty self-involved guy who got involved with them for, you know, similar reasons, but you could be a little bit more, maybe he is kind of more of like a Bill Murray self-involved type. Mm-hmm. I think Rita Wilson could be someone who has a sense of ideals, but has no actual real world experience where she thinks she has all these like lofty goals and dreams, but has never actually like had to put them into action.
Right.
So she's like, yeah, I know what I want to do with the Peace Corps. And then actually gets plopped into Bangkok and is like, oh, actually, theoreticals are different from real life. With John Candy, I think you could have him as sort of like this very pro-America guy who joins the Peace Corps for that reason, and then gets mildly intrigued by communist ideas that the villagers are telling him, where they're just sort of mentioning things in passing, like, oh, we've heard about like these things about communism, and he's like, huh, that's an interesting point that you're making here. I don't think he gets brainwashed per se, but throughout the movie, he's just kind of like, huh, interesting. Now that you say that, that does make me think.
Less of a brainwashing, more of a like, he's legitimately inspired or interested in these ideas.
Right.
Yeah.
I think you could have Gede Watanabe as maybe an American of Thai descent who's joins because his parents are like, you have to learn something about your culture. We've been in America for your whole life. Fucking learn what Thailand is like. And he's like, oh my God, I don't want to. And they're like, too bad, kid. You're joining the Peace Corps and you're going to Bangkok. And he's like, oh, fuck. And so he has to kind of deal with the fact that he is like the most Americanized. The villagers are like, we know him. He's Thai. He's like, no. I don't fucking know what you guys do at all. I'm an American. Like, I don't understand any of this whatsoever. Please stop asking me what the villagers want. I don't know. And so, you know, shit like that. I would eliminate the CIA and the drug lord and the communist armies and literally just making about these dummies trying to build a bridge across a river. Like, it's just that, like, these people are, like, so fucking stupid and bad at their jobs and are working for an organization that has fallen from so much grace that it's just a struggle to fucking build a bridge. It can also follow, I think, the more surreal tone that this movie kind of dips its toe into, because I think that would be a lot more fun if you're going for something like this. Mm-hmm. But that's what I got.
I love that idea. I love that you came up with, too. I want to have Peace Corps, but I want the way that we get there to be pretty different. My thinking was, we spend a little bit more time, not necessarily Tom Hanks at Yale, we're more just getting the Tom Hanks doing rich people shit with his rich family. Obviously, we don't spend a whole ton of time on it, but I wanted there to be basically a series of building events to tell us that he's, like, fucking up in some kind of way, mm-hmm. particularly maybe gambling away the money, annoying his parents. I want us to kind of see his parents kind of having their last nerve worked by his nonsense. I think it's the parents that signed him up for the Peace Corps to be like, get the fuck out. We're not bankrolling this nonsense anymore. I kind of feel like the debt needs to be larger than $28,000, by the way. I know it was the 80s or whatever.
It was the 60s, technically.
Oh, sorry. So, yeah, so, yeah, I guess you're
that
right.
That is a pretty big chunk.
But I, yeah, goddamn, I forgot about that. Okay, never mind. We'll keep it the same amount. But I think it just needs to be like, no, we need... The parents just decide to cut him off. You need to learn and grow up. I think it would be a funny joke if a lot of... In the Peace Corps, that it's not just going to be him, John Candy, and Rita Wilson. I want it to be a whole group. I'm not a huge fan of the Police Academy movies, but I was thinking of a similar setup.
I think it'd be really fun if there was a guy who made sound effects.
Yes. Oh, obviously. We'll get Michael Winslow, don't you worry. I do want to kind of ape it in that way, where it is... It's going to... Similar to what you were saying, I want an ensemble. I think it's okay if Tom Hanks is sort of our... somewhat protagonist, but I do want us to have it just sort of be about the shenanigans that group gets up to. And I also would want Gede Watanabe to be in a similar role, but my thinking is that he was a kind of like a European educated Thai man who was like brought in specifically by the Peace Corps, not just a guy who just happened to be there.
Yeah,
because I do think there would be some interesting tension similar to what you had mentioned. I'm also eliminating the drugs, the communists. I'm also getting rid of the bridge. I think instead of that, they're attempting to build a school. And that the goal that they're being given is to teach these people English. I think the way that we can kind of touch some of those more kind of weird America and other places ideas would be around the arrogance it takes to be like, no, this village in the middle of Thailand must learn how to speak English. But yeah, I think that's how I would shift it. I think it roots it more in this idea of him needing to change. I think that gets more effectively done if he has fucked up bad enough to be sent out by his parents.
My fix, I was torn basically because... I came into this wanting to do the three plots with the bridge, but nobody wants to help the village thing. And then it sort of came up organically during the podcast that a lot of the goofy comedy wouldn't fit with that premise. And I was like, oh, you're right.
Oh, no.
I want it to be like an absurd airplane style comedy, but you're right. It doesn't make sense. And so I don't know.
I think you just have to be really clever about how you do it, you know?
Yeah.
And it's not as if comedy can exist in these things. Because think about In the Loop, for example, is about something pretty serious, but it's a very funny comedy.
My argument to all that is more just that, like, I think this movie is bad at juggling that. I don't think it's impossible that you
I think that,
could do
it. I don't know. The tone-wise, like, I know that there's different opinions on Burn After Reading here, but I feel like I kind of want a Burn After Reading style tone for this, where it's just maybe a bit darker, but still quite absurd. And ridiculous, where it is over the top at times, and when things happen, but it is like, you're watching, like, again, just sort of everyone be a bit inept, like the CIA is a little inept and blunt with their attempts to build the bridge, and the communist army is a little inept at what they're doing, and the drug people are also, like, they're all working at cross purposes. I think that it's kind of fun if everyone in the Peace Corps is faking being virtuous and they're all shitheads. And it, maybe they are pretending to each other at first in a sort of Coen Brothers style thing where you come in and everyone has their own reason to pretend to be like in here for legit reasons. And they all think that they need to keep up the charade because that everyone else thinks
they're the lone one out.
And then they kind of have to discover throughout the movie that, like, they're all pieces of shit. And then there's, like, one character in the village who, like, is us... Who, like the Gede Watanabe character would be somebody who would be, like, the closest to a virtuous character, but is still also mostly a self-centered bullshit who just mostly cares about his own well-being, but... Because his well-being is tied to the village, it is therefore, like, the most virtuous position in the movie, but not by much, because he's still self-centered. So, yeah, I think that I would kind of set it up like that and just have it be a humor that is a little more, like, pointed and satirical, but still kind of absurd, and just a little more dark, more bodies dropping, I think, would happen throughout the movie.
I like that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think that's a good way to address almost, like, the inherent political value of Americans in, like, doing this kind of thing in Thailand without making it a bummer.
Yeah, I kind of like the idea of, like, these three Peace Corps dummies, like, trying to, like, do something that they think is just going to be like, oh, this is just going to, like, get us, like, some like, better access to, like, alcohol or something. And then, like, they accidentally just, like, kill some guy and they're like, oh, shit.
Yeah.
Just, like, dump him in the river. Like, what? Nothing about that.
Now for the final question. Would you recommend this movie?
I think it's a fascinating artifact if you're a Tom Hanks fan.
Yeah.
You should watch him try to do this accent. And it's short and free on YouTube, but it's not a good film.
No.
No, I would not recommend this movie. Sucks. I would not recommend it.
Yeah,
there's a handful of good jokes and there's a couple of good moments that are fun, but yeah. Then this movie is also like an hour and 46. I want to say if this were 20 minutes shorter, I think maybe I'd be a little bit more on the fence and being like, well, at least it's only 86 minutes, you know.
Right.
When I first watched this, I was just like, I can't fucking believe that I'm not halfway done with this movie yet. For me, my interest craters once they get to Thailand, and I think that's pretty accurate.
Soon.
Right. And so I'm sustained for a little bit, and then I just kind of immediately almost lose interest. As I said, the exceptions, a few good jokes, some things like that. But aside from that, you still have half the movie left to get through all that. No, I do not recommend this.
Yeah, I agree with the things you said, but I think I ultimately fall more on Lee's side of it, where I would say yes, but with a giant asterisk that there's a lot about it that is not acceptable.
Certainly true.
It's kind of fascinating to see Tom Hanks in this role that does not fit him, and it really was an experience, like I was saying, to see like the old TriStar logo and like, I don't know. There are bits about this that made me feel nostalgic.
Yeah. I recommend it for the TriStar logo.
The TriStar logo. Yes. That one, like...
the Pegasus like, jumping
two seconds.
Yeah, right. It was worth it just to see that Pegasus again, frankly.
I guess before we buy it out, we'll just give our website as draphack.com.
Yep.
You can check out all of our episodes there. Please feel free to rate us or leave a review on whichever podcast app you're using.
Yeah, Apple.
We will be back in 2 weeks with a mini episode where we'll announce our next movie. But for now...
Bye.